So I'm going to be talking first about roles of workplace health and safety as an issue in labor organizing. And I don't have the formal slide, but let me say that I don't have any conflicts, issue that disclaimer, no financial conflicts to report. So the need to organize, why is it important? Because labor unions are at a very low point in terms of their membership, particularly in private industry. And what does this mean compared to countries with a much higher union rate, Sweden as an example? What that means on a whole lot of levels is that labor plays a much more influential level nationally in terms of politics, but very importantly in the issues we're talking about, what happens in a workplace. In countries with high union representation, there are such things as tripartite agreements. That's how health and safety is handled in European countries. Tripartite means that there are three equal partners, government, business, and labor, and they meet together and they develop policies together. That can be enforced, and things such as right to refuse dangerous work, health and safety committees, other things that are important aspects of making workplaces safer happen in places like Sweden because the union representation rate is around 70 to 75%. So today in private industry, only 1 in 14 workers is a member of a labor union. And this runs down what has happened in terms of membership in unions really around 1952, I think it hit its highest. But, you know, our history we have to appreciate. I think we have a culture of individualism, a culture of very strong anti-union, philosophy. I don't think we learn very much about labor unions in our regular education. I didn't really learn anything about labor unions till I was in my final quarter in college when I had a course that was focused on labor. So. I think when we're growing up, going through schools, we don't hear a whole lot about labor unions. Oh, well, there were some strikes, and companies decided that maybe it wasn't so bad to have unions, and we had unions after that. But there isn't a whole lot of labor history, and that's different from European countries. And I think we have to recognize that our experience that we're very familiar with is not necessarily the way it is in a lot of countries around the world. So at this point, we're down to 12.3% of workers in the United States are in a union. Now, in addition to organizing that we hear about, that labor unions involved in campaigns where workers are not members of a union and they're trying to win an election or get a card check to organize, we also have internal organizing. In 22 states in the United States, there are laws that are called right to work, which basically means that a union, if they do represent workers there, the workers do not have to join the union. They don't have to pay dues, but it's the obligation of the union to represent them. So they can come and go in terms of their union membership pretty freely. So in those states, which are primarily in the southern part of the United States, organizing is a constant process. You're always losing members and needing to organize new members. And we found in the work that I'll talk about later within our union and other unions as well, that in that kind of environment, provision of information about health and safety can be very important in terms of reaching out to workers because, what workers hear a lot and what their suspicion is, well, you're only interested in signing me up in the union because you want some dues. And health and safety information, learning about rights that people, the workers have, under the OSHA law is a valuable way of, showing what the union can provide and that we're not just after dues, that we have services and ways that we can improve people's lives. So generally when labor organizers are looking at a potential organizing site, a workplace, they're often looking at these kind of issues in a campaign to try and make it successful. Is it widely or deeply felt? Is it easy to understand? Does it build solidarity or will it build solidarity? Is it winnable? Does it send a message to the employer and can it win community support? Community support is sometimes very important in organizing drives. So let's, looking at this from a health and safety point of view, We feel that health and safety are concerns that most workers do feel and care deeply about. And there are a couple of studies here. The first one was one the AFL-CIO had commissioned. The quality of working conditions and safety on the job are primary concerns of workers, organized or not. 98% of the workers surveyed said a safe and healthy workplace was essential or very important. The second survey is interesting. It came out a few years ago, and it was done by a labor-busting firm, and they wanted to do a survey of unorganized workers, the general population, to find out what they had to be aware of or what they'd advise their employer clients as to the issues that may come up that would attract workers and interest workers in organizing. And they found that 63%, actually more than any other factor, cited health and safety, that they thought, unorganized workers thought that was something unions could help bring. So that was a concern to the law firm in terms of advising employers how to fight unions. Recently, a series of surveys showed 85% of those surveyed felt that health and safety regulations were the most important labor standard, even more important than family medical leave, minimum wage, overtime pay, and so forth. Okay, health and safety issues can be won, and that's an important point because it's one of the barriers, I think. The OSHA law has many flaws. It's been underfunded throughout its history, but it does provide a series of rights that most workers, or many workers, are unaware of in terms of information, in terms of training, in terms of other rights and protections on the job. And union contracts also provide very important additional ways that you can work on health and safety issues, because especially in situations where there aren't OSHA standards or where OSHA may not act promptly or may not be able to come out and resolve a situation. I think there's a common feeling over and over again that when you talk to workers that they do expect to be able to go to work and to return home without having to compromise their health or their safety. It's, goes back to some of the surveys I mentioned before, that this is a deeply felt expectation that they shouldn't have to make those kind of compromises. The other important point that we stress a lot in our training is that the experts in the workplace are the workers themselves who do that work, and that they know the job hazards, they know which jobs they'd like to bid off on if they can, they know how jobs can be done more safely. The tragedy is that they're not brought into the process and consulted enough in most workplaces. They can win community support, and I mentioned a few of these. Obviously, with the coal mine disaster earlier in the year, this is brought more attention nationally to the issue of health and safety. It's dissipated some recently, but we're talking about, and people are much more aware of workplace health and safety when these kind of situations happen. Workplace violence is something that we have a law that was just passed in New York recently, one that was passed in Ontario, in the province of Ontario, also workplace violence, which was the result directly of workplace violence incidents. That's something that people understand. People know individuals who have suffered violence on the job, and so that's something that people relate to, the general public can relate to. Work hours are another. Some of the laws that were passed, especially having to do with interns working in hospitals and so forth, related directly to the fact that unreasonable work hours impact very directly on consumers, on people, on patients in a healthcare setting. Patient lifting is another. This is one of the areas where I think we're starting to make some advances in terms of legislation, and there's some efforts. There's national legislation on that. Also a program in New York that's been successful that's not a law yet, but people have relatives who are in nursing homes. They know it's a very direct connection to be able to identify with that situation of having loved ones in a hospital setting and understanding what is involved in the folks who have to do patient lifting and other very strenuous physical work. I'm sure Pam will be talking also about hotel workers, and there's a lot more understanding now about the lifting burdens that hotel workers face in the course of a normal day. And bathroom access is another issue. Right now within our union, we're involved at three different poultry facilities. You know, people ask me sometimes, well, what kind of exotic, you know, chemical exposures are you dealing with or concerned about? We have three plants right now where the company has been telling workers that going to the bathroom is a privilege, it's not a right, and they've set, you know, restrictions either in terms of how long they can go to the bathroom or how many times they can go and so forth. So we're dealing with that. Now, there was an interesting case that UFCW was involved in, United Food and Commercial Workers, back in the Jim Beam whiskey, I guess, production facility in Kentucky. And this was about 10 years ago. And, you know, the company was doing the same thing. They were trying to restrict access to the bathroom. And it made it onto one of the late night TV shows and, you know, start joking around about, oh, well, you know, we know the color of urine and we know the color of whiskey, or maybe you don't know what you're going to be getting. And that policy changed the next day. So, you know, there's some of these issues where, you know, the public can be involved, where they understand what workers go through doing these things 40 or more hours per week, that we can build public support. Now, some of the barriers, why isn't health and safety included more often in organizing drives? You know, some of the barriers, there's a general perception that health and safety issues are very technical, that you need to, you know, get like everybody up here. We have at least master's or doctorate degrees in public health, and you need, you know, industrial hygiene training and toxicology, or you need to be a physician to be able to know how to deal with health and safety issues. And that just isn't the case. A lot of times it comes down to the kind of things that we're dealing with, basic human dignity, with basic things like being able to go to the bathroom when you need to, issues about training and what makes good training. And the issues, the information is out there. The experts are the people who are doing the jobs day in, day out. And it really doesn't have to be seen as technical. Yes, if in certain situations we can get more technical information when we need it, but the real battles and getting, you know, attention, building momentum on the issues, you don't need a lot of technical training for that. One of the other barriers is that especially organizers will think, well, health and safety means OSHA. It means you have to bring in OSHA, or if there isn't a clear OSHA violation, then, you know, there's no problem. OSHA, one of the problems with OSHA is that their regulations, the ones that they do have, are compromises. We can have health problems in a facility and they don't violate an OSHA standard, but that doesn't mean we don't have a problem. And so we need to work on those issues, whether, you know, and sometimes OSHA can be a part of it and sometimes they're not. There's also a feeling that a lot of workplaces, especially maybe in the service industry, don't have health and safety problems, and we find significant health and safety problems in virtually every workplace that we're involved in. So, but that's, you know, a perception. Well, if it's not a coal mine or it's not deep sea fishing in storms or logging or, you know, something like that, then it's not a hazardous industry, but that isn't the case. And then there's a perception that not much can be done on safety, and that's, you know, safety is like any other issue. That I always say it's like, you know, other contract issues that the workers face. You have to work together, struggle, and it's not always easy, but we can definitely win and have won lots of victories on health and safety. So one of the areas, a lot of times when organizers are out and they're, you know, beginning to develop a campaign, they're trying to see who might be on a committee, how they're going to, you know, what issues they're going to select. Health and safety doesn't necessarily come up right away. And they'll say, you know, I'll ask, you know, if they're working on it, well, you know, they haven't really said anything specifically about health and safety. So, and part of it is that organizers haven't necessarily had a whole lot of training in health and safety, and they tend to think, you know, just in terms of OSHA violations. They may do some initial research on the OSHA website, and they find out, well, the plant's never been inspected or they've never been cited for anything, and so they may think there aren't any real issues. So these are some of the things that found useful in terms of where there initially doesn't seem to be a lot of raising of health and safety issues. Asking some of these questions can be helpful, especially about injured workers. What's been the experience of workers injured at that plant? And what about all the workers who, you know, never made it in the comp system because they were afraid or they were intimidated or whatever, you know, and what are the stories and why were they injured and how were they injured? And most importantly, how did the company respond to those injuries? Did they try and, you know, blame the worker and not acknowledge that there were conditions at work that were at least very strong contributors to why an accident happened? And, you know, that reveals a lot about the attitude of the company. When as people start sharing those experiences and other workers hear about, you know, the injury experiences and the ramifications of that, that builds, you know, interest in an organizing drive. One of the issues that comes up a lot is, how important is safety? You may ask in general, are there any health and safety problems? We start asking, well, how seriously does the company take safety? Is safety always a backseat to production? And that's, you know, common in a lot of places, and that builds too when people realize that that's important in building interest in an organizing drive. Unfortunately, people are a lot, you know, afraid to bring up health and safety issues, and that comes out, and it's important to find out why and what are the incentives or disincentives, what are the fears. You know, it could be, you know, situations where people don't have documentation, they're immigrant workers, and that's a real issue too. And then who is legally responsible for health and safety? This is an important one because I think there's a very conscious shifting of attitudes. Employers are responsible to provide a safe and healthy workplace free of hazards that can cause death or serious injury. But these days there's a lot of talk of, well, everybody's responsible for safety. You know, it's the worker's responsibility to work safely. Well, it's the employer's legal responsibility. Workers have to adhere to safety rules, but it's, you know, the employer's control what work is done, how it's done, how fast it's done, and so forth, and that's why they're legally responsible. And it's important that workers understand that. They understand their rights, but also understand why it is that the employer is legally responsible. So one of the things that we can do as a union is provide a lot of information, technical assistance, and assist in direct action on workplace issues. These are advantages of integrating health and safety concerns into organizing campaigns. Put a focus on a deeply felt issue, put pressure on the employer to act, demonstrate resources of the union, and demonstrate the power of collective action. So let me mention several of the campaigns that we've been involved in where health and safety was a key issue. We had a tortilla plant, mostly all immigrant workers. Health and safety issues were very important in why those workers decided to vote for the union. Unfortunately, this was a case where after that fact, a lot of the workers were, the Social Security letters came, a lot of them were dismissed, and there was harassment of the people who are active in the union. One of the individuals was set up with a phony car accident and told, you know, either leave the plant or you're in trouble, you know, legally. And so it's very difficult in the South in some of these situations to organize, for sure. Another plant where there are a lot of machine guarding, lockout, tagout issues. That played an important role as people learned what OSHA regulations were in terms of that campaign. Another one, just information about specific substances where there were concerns and they had gotten that information or training previously. We had a session as part of the organizing campaign where we explained how to control these hazards, and that was, you know, seen as very important to the workers and who decided to vote for the union. And then Alabama and throughout the South, we do a lot of internal organizing. Again, you know, information on OSHA rights and OSHA standards is seen as, you know, important information that the union has to give them. Okay, these are in union workplaces, a lot of the advantages that when it comes down to why should people join unions, a lot of times these days, there's a question, well, you know, union workplaces, people aren't necessarily making more money than non-union workplaces. But one of the important issues is the representation, the fact that you can't be fired at will, there's a grievance procedure, and health and safety issues can be brought up in that grievance procedure. And a lot can be done when rather than having to try and rely on OSHA. So in terms of those kind of contractual arrangements, the rights under national labor relations give more power to workers who are unionized to deal with health and safety issues than unorganized situations.